7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 35 of Color of Magic, your magic and gaming podcast, where we try to raise the profile of people who don't generally get that level in the gaming space. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as usual, for 35 episodes going, I still got my co-host here, Brian Allen. How's it going, dude?
It's going. It's wild times, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I feel you. It has been a crazy, crazy time, man. It has been a wild, I guess 3-4 days with everything going on. Let me go ahead and get some business out of the way here and just tell everybody, don't forget about our sponsor, CardsFair.com. They are an awesome place to buy, sell, trade cards, and they only have a 1% transaction fee whenever you buy stuff. It's cool. They take the work out of you finding people who have the cards you want and them finding you when you have the cards they want. It's actually pretty slick. I've used it myself, sent a couple of cards off, got a couple of cards back. It is really, really awesome, and they are big supporters of all of our content. So please, check their website out. It's totally free. And if you put money into your account and don't get cards in 30 days, they give your money back. No transaction fees, no nothing, no questions asked. I also have a video on my YouTube channel of a walkthrough as I set up my account if you just want to check that out. So give them a look. They are super nice people, super awesome. And with everything going on, if you want to support a minority-owned business, they are 66% minority-owned. Two of their three owners are people of color. So there you go. Perfect and timely with everything else going on. All right, so I wanted to get that out of the way.
Because now we got to start cutting people out, figuratively, not literally.
This is the episode I've been telling everybody that if you're going to share an episode of our show, if people want to know why we believe in what we're doing, why our show is important, maybe some people are going to need to hear some things they don't want to hear, but need to hear it. This is going to be the episode you want to share with people. I might even earmark this episode as the one that if people are curious about what our show is, what we do, what it's about, I'm going to tell them, listen to episode 35 and then go back and listen to episode 1 on. That's how important I think what we're about to have go down the show is. Just giving you a heads up. And if you don't like it, if you think it's going to bother you or whatever, you may want to check out on this episode, because we're going to come with some real hard facts. And yeah, sure. Matter of fact, I would even say if you don't like that content, maybe you should strap yourself down to a chair and listen, because you might be the one that needs to hear this. So we did introduce a segment last week, which coincidentally kind of fits perfectly with everything going on in the soapbox. So we're going to quiet everybody down, but this is kind of how we feel right now. And I don't want to start a fuss, but I think I'm going to start a fuss. So, and I'm going to say this, Brian, I've made a lot of notes over the last 48 hours. So y'all, this segment's going to go for about probably 20 to 30 minutes. Just letting you know, this is going to be a long one. If anybody wants to use anything from this episode, feel free, give us credit, use the appropriate sound bites, whatever. And feel free to jump in whenever you want, Brian. I'll probably need to take a breath and grab a drink anyway at some point. So I'm going to start with trying to explain to people how little representation there is, especially in the magic space. But in gaming in general, this is also true. For those of you who don't know, there's a magic game designer and R&D at Wizards of the Coast named Gavin Verhey. Gavin's a great dude, by the way. He's got 27,000 followers on Twitter. He posted up yesterday for the whole, I think it was Blackout Tuesday is what they were calling it. He made one post and said he wanted to draw attention to Black content creators and personalities in the magic space. And he called out me and Cedric, who, by the way, Cedric's fantastic, by the way. Great commentator, great on magic strategy stuff. He owns a clothing line, like, or clothing company. Like, so great dude. And then he wanted everybody to just fill in on that tweet other black personalities. I followed that tweet for 5 hours. There were 17 total responses, and it had probably about 30, 40 shares at that point. And this is from somebody who has 27,000 followers, mind you. Other than me and Cedric, somebody had referenced the Mana Squad guys, which we had on the show, I think on like episode 3 or 4. Great dudes, real funny. There was one guy who put himself in the thread, who goes by Treasure Goblin, which, by the way, he had somebody give him crap for even putting his name in there. And then I put in JRR2, who is a great deck builder, who's finished number one Mythic 2 different times in the last few months. Great dude. And then somebody put Ellie of the Veil in, who actually isn't actually black. Though Ellie's a great person, highly recommend supporting him. And that's it. There was nobody else in 5 hours that anybody could find and put in there. There was a separate thread I saw somebody started that had a handful of players that got mentioned. But in the content creative space, his 27,000, let's even say like for algorithmic purposes, whatever, only 25% even saw it. That's still over 5,000 people, over 6,000 people that saw it and couldn't name somebody and or didn't feel motivated to put somebody's name in that thread. So when we sit around and talk about people need to be recognized or called out, or we need to do something to give visibility to these people, or black people or people of color aren't on the same level, they're the same platform, or we don't occupy the same mental or social space that some of these white personalities do, this is the type of stuff we're talking about. Like literally 5 hours, 27,000 followers, and we couldn't name more than a handful of people.
Now, if you change that question to which card needs to be banned, imagine what kind of response you get.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is just absolutely crazy. And then there was another point I wanted to talk about. That this type of stuff is going on, right? And people want to talk about different levels of privilege. And one of the things somebody mentioned was, when is it a good time? Because they wanted to ask, and they sent me a message and said, when is it a good time for me to talk to my child about racial issues, racial prejudice? You know, because I think they said they had 2 kids were like 6 and 8. And I told them, the problem is you don't even understand that the fact that you get to ask that question is a level of privilege that I don't have. That, and we talked about this pre-show, you know, just about every black kid I know at some point before the age of 12 has been told you can't go to a certain place looking or dressing like you want to. You can't go to a certain part of town after hours. You can't hang out at certain parties. You can't even go to certain people's houses because you might end up dead. Not just for awareness that somebody might not like you or that your friends around you are ignorant or don't have awareness, which is what you're trying to teach your kid. Literally, we have to tell black kids that you can't do certain things, that because of the color of your skin, you may not come home. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about privilege. And man, and those of you that are listening, I am trying to be very measured right now.
Yeah.
So I don't say something that I may regret later. But these are real conversations. Like when everybody's wondering, like, how do things get to the way they are right now? This is how they get there.
You know, and people say, you know, why? Well, you know, I just don't feel politics should be involved. For us, it's not politics, it's survival.
That's the absolute truth.
It's how not to get shot or arrested.
Saying that somebody should be treated equally or not be fearful of for their life just because they're going shopping shouldn't be a political issue. Like, you know as well as I do, you've had those conversations, those talk about when you get pulled over by a cop, it's like, make sure your ID's in a certain place, yeah, your insurance in a certain place, keep your hands on the wheel, don't go reach for the glove box, only say these things, whatever. Like, we literally, as Black people, have learned a handbook of how to stay out of trouble with the police officer who pulls you over. The fact that LeVar Burton, who is probably in the general public sphere, next to Wayne Brady, the nicest Black dude on the planet, and he's afraid and had to have that conversation with his kids. That is crazy. The dude from Reading Rainbow,
yeah,
the dude that's popular among all the geeks, he's afraid for him and his child when they get pulled over by a police officer.
In terms of recognizability, there are a handful of people that are on his level, and even he knows if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, he gonna get shot, possibly.
And that's the thing. We're not talking about people that have bad police records, people that are breaking the law, people that have stepped afoul of social faux pas. These are some of the most upstanding citizens possible. And they still worry about it. And I have friends to this day that are like, oh, well, you never have those issues. And I'm like, dude, I have those issues every day. I just don't talk to you about them. I've been grocery shopping with two full, heavy handfuls of groceries and had the people in front of me that are 15 or so feet in front of me looking over their shoulder at me and rushing to their car because they think I'm, I don't know, like, carjack them or something.
With your two bags of groceries.
In broad daylight, in a busy parking lot, mind you.
Step out of the car, please. I'm going to need to put this cheese down, but then you'll get carjacked.
Like, this is the stuff that happens. And it happens in our game spaces, too. I mean, I've told the stories in the show about people who have made side comments about me because I'm the one Black guy they have to play against or whatever. Or the people, go ahead.
Standpoint, with all due respect, my brother, I can't think of anybody that looks less threatening than you.
Oh, I agree.
You're skinny, you know, you have glasses. Like, there's nothing about you that looks like, oh, this is a guy I need to just watch myself around.
But even then, like I said, I've had customers come in my store that wanted to talk to the manager or owner and then looked me dead in the eye and said, well, no, I want to talk to somebody else. Like, you can't tell me this doesn't happen. And this is every day.
Yeah.
These are just normal interactions.
I would go through the same things working as a reporter. Like, okay, there's basically, like, is there a white person I can talk to? I need to see the editor. You're talking to the editor. Okay, where's your handler? Where's your publisher? Where's your...
Yep. And then... And if there's a soundbite you want to use, anyone, I'm telling you right now, this is it. Start your recorders. Get ready for the next 5 minutes. Because these conversations get followed up with, as a white person, what can I do to be more of an ally? And the problem is, for the majority of you, you haven't even shown that you're ready. Because, and we'll use our show as an example. I know that any given week, we can get between 1,000 and 2,000 downloads. Yet, if you go look at any of our social media, our YouTube channels, our Twitch channels, Twitter pages, we don't have 2,000 followers. So you're coming to the show, listening to what we have to say, and then you're not even doing the smallest possible thing to help give us more visibility and normalize our presence. You're not going to any of these websites and literally hitting a subscribe button, hitting a follow button, hitting a like button. You're not sharing any of the major projects we put out when we're working on something or working with a charity or whatever. And we know, we can see how many times something gets shared or retweeted and see who did it. But you're coming and asking for some high level thing that you can feel good about, get praise for, whatever, but you haven't proven that you're willing to do the baseline level zero thing. A thing that takes you 15 seconds. Hell, if you don't even have an account, it probably takes you 2 minutes. And you're not even doing that. And we know that because the numbers don't add up. People that have literally said, oh, your show is so important and, you know, everybody should be listening to this and whatever. Okay, cool. What are you doing to help us get it in front of more people? When we talk about people don't know about all these Black personalities that are creating content doing whatever, like, what are you doing to help them be seen? Part of the biggest issue isn't just coming around when an issue is big or donating to a thing. When we talk about equal treatment, it starts by just helping people be visible. Get people used to seeing Black faces in things, learning from them, building that empathic bridge, understanding that they can have ideas and they have cool products and they're building things and creating things. That's how you normalize it. So they see it every day and it becomes part of their normal consumption. But you're not willing to do that. And this goes for some of my friends too that I've had for years. Like, you come forward and say, hey, I want to help. And somewhere in the back of my mind, there's like, okay, cool, but what about all the time in between? You want to show up when there's a major crisis, but day to day, hell, I'll use myself as an example. There are some people that I know are putting less time into their content and their crafts than I do. Their quality's worse. But some of those same people that have stepped up and said, I want to know what I can do, actively share their stuff every single time it gets posted. Might share one of my things once every 10th time. But supposedly we're close. You believe in what I'm doing. But you're not showing the actions that say you truly do. So when people are a little reluctant to give you a handbook for something bigger, understand where it's coming from. Because they see your other actions too. And I'm not talking about people say, hey, I realize I haven't done enough. I want to know what things I could do. That's fine. But when you just show up on game day, but you haven't been coming to all the practices, don't be surprised if you don't get put in the starting lineup.
We're talking about practice?
Exactly. We're talking about practice. And literally, it's as simple, like literally every single one of y'all listening to this, if you're on any of those platforms, we should have an influx of followers after this episode. Or subscribers, or whatever. And I can almost guarantee you we won't.
Some people may leave.
And you know what? If they leave, fine.
I'll be curious to see what the net, I'm speaking math here, what the net gains and losses are after this one.
But the biggest thing, you know, and this kind of connects to something else too that happened to me over the weekend, which also kind of piggybacks on this whole issue. Is I got to talking to some other Black people and we were having the conversation about how does all this and all these different spaces get this way? You know, professional, personal, sports, politics, whatever. Because there has to be an underlying thing if it's that big. And of course, excluding the obvious, that there's still racist organizations and whatever, like, cool. That aside, how does it get to where it's so easy for people to feel the way they do? And one of the things we started talking about is school is one of the most important things. With everybody going to school, spending anywhere between 7 and 10 hours a day, depending on where you go to school, if you have after school programs, all that stuff. But I imagine most people don't have enough Black instructors. And what comes with that is you get used to seeing Black people in positions of authority. You get used to hearing their ideas. You get to see them care for you and about you. You get to learn about them. You build those empathic bridges to treat them as another equal that you would to any other teacher. But you're not getting that opportunity. So if that hypothesis holds true, I decided I'm just going to ask all my social media. So I went to several different groups I'm part of, on Facebook, on Twitter. And I just quickly posted it, and then I went to play the Arena Open. And we'll talk about that later. But 4.5 hours later, when I came back, there were 30,000 responses to that question. And the majority of them hadn't had even one Black teacher.
That's mine.
A bunch of them had one, and that's why they were remembered. And then here's the real depressing part to all this. And this kind of piggybacks on my last statement about people not really wanting to do the real work and share the real information. Everybody responded to this question. As a matter of fact, I believe at the time of this recording, it said it almost 67,000 responses. Hell, to the point that I got to exchange messages with a president's daughter because of it. That's how many people had responded to this thing. So I took it upon myself because I said, you know what? This wasn't my intention, but if this many people are going to respond, I want to start compiling data so people have something they can use. So I literally spent 9 hours going through all these data points, building spreadsheets, building charts, doing a 3-page write-up, posting it up, and it hasn't even gotten 1/10 of the engagement. And the difference is I purposely, and I know no less than 100 people that I directly responded to with the link to it in a direct message. I retweeted and tagged them on tweets. So when you put the info together and say, here, let's use this. Here's stuff you can take to your local city council or school board, or here's a thing you can have a conversation about among your friends with actual data. Nobody wanted to touch it. So again, you're asking a simple question. Everybody shows up. Ask them to do something for real. Nobody wants to do anything with it. Just like we're talking about. People will come and put us on in the background and listen to our show, but they're not going to follow up and help us be more visible. That's the reason we're doing this show. That's the reason we have to do these things. To get people to pay attention to those issues. To get people to understand that it's not all about fighting some big, crazy, invisible monster. Like, this is a small, everyday thing that you have to normalize.
Because before we started doing this, we were both thinking, like, somebody has to have done this already. There's no, because we, between the two of us, know, you know, a fair amount of people of color in the community. Like, we must just not be seeing something. Surely somebody's done this. And after we did the research, no, nobody was doing this.
And let me be fair. If you've made it this far without turning us off, and hell, maybe you're really sitting there thinking about this and you feel bad about it. That's step one. Don't be like all the people who aren't sharing the data that I put together. Now that you have this information and this perspective, go act on it. Go find your Black friends, and not even just in the magic or gaming spaces. If you know somebody's doing something in another space where they lack visibility, hell, they might be, I don't know, maybe they make car video things for mechanics. I don't know. But like, share them. Put their stuff out there. When people are needing somebody for a job, recommend them and their skills. just give them equal opportunity. You know, I had a friend, he had posted on Facebook that he feels racist because he sees people's skin color and he immediately starts thinking about people's cultures and history and whatever. And I said, that's not the problem. None of us give a damn if you see the fact that we're black. We can't hide it. The problem is when you start treating people less than the way you would treat somebody else. That you don't give them the same opportunity. That it becomes harder for them to get the same visibility. That's when we have a problem. Hell, most people I know of all ethnicities actually appreciate when you acknowledge their history, their culture, whatever, properly. Nobody's trying to stop you from that.
Which is why, as we've discussed earlier, I don't see color as problematic. And there's an episode about that, too. If you're still listening.
For sure. But the issue is that, like we're saying, like I know people that I have personally helped build content and build their stuff from the ground up that they get way more attention than I do. And they're using all the tricks, techniques, information, whatever that I have helped impart on them. And don't get me wrong, I'm not hating them for it. It's not their fault. They came and asked me for help. I gave them help. Totally cool. And I would do it again. But I, knowing that I'm going to have to work harder than every single one of them to get to the same level they're at, and I'm the one who helped them get there, is a little depressing on some days. And it's because I know my stuff won't be shared as much. People won't connect with me as much. I look different than a lot of other people, and that's going to make people not want to listen to me, watch me, whatever. But it's a thing. So if you're here now, the things you can do start at level zero. Go support these people's crafts, their jobs, their ideas. Normalize them being part of your communities. If they want to do something big, cool, put them out in front of people. Say, hey, why don't you listen to this person's podcast? Why don't you check out this book this person wrote? Go over and subscribe to this person's YouTube channel if you're into the thing that they make or whatever. Hell, I have friends that put stuff up that I'm not even into their stuff. I don't sub to their channel, but I see when they post it on Facebook, and if it looks like something interesting or useful, I share it or retweet it for people. But that's how we really get started. At some point, we really have to do the basic thing so everyone gets treated equally, that everyone gets the same space. But if you're not doing things at the absolute basic level, it's never going to get there. Because you can wait and try to do something big, but all the stuff at the bottom is still wrong. So yeah, you do this one big thing and you change something for one person or whatever, great. There's still going to be all the other problems at the bottom, and you're going to have another 1,000 people trying to climb out of the hole, struggling because they're not getting those same opportunities. Because they're friends. Man, maybe it's wrong to say so-called friends won't even click a like button or retweet a post. I'll leave it at that, dude. Anything else you want to add to that segment?
You know, when I disagree, I tell you I disagree, and you ain't said nothing yet that I disagree with. So.
Yeah. So let's take a break from that for a second. Just a second. And let's do talk about some gaming and Magic news. This past weekend, we did have the MTG Arena open. And it looks like it went pretty well. And Wizards gave away a lot of prize money, man. We talked about that a little bit. I think a bunch of people were hating on the event and saying, well, you know, they're going to get all these entries and blah, blah, blah. And you have to do the best of one on day one and whatever. At the end of the day, I believe the numbers were they had 120 people that got the 7 wins on day 2. Got $2,000 a piece. Well, then that means they gave away $240,000 to just the people that went 7 wins. Which generally, the way math works, you're going to end up with probably at least double that or near or more. They got 6 wins, which is also $1,000. So let's go that another $120,000. That means they gave over $350,000 away for that event. Not counting all the gems they gave away and whatever that dollar value is, because that's literally, if you had 100 people, 120 people go seven wins, that means there's probably another couple thousand people that probably got gems. So it's not unreal to think that in cash and prizes, they gave away $400,000 last weekend. That's damn good.
Weekend worth of work.
What's that?
That ain't bad for a weekend worth of work.
No, I mean, like, so, and this is what I'm talking about. Like, though I get it, I'm not a big best of one fan or whatever. I like playing best of three. But I understand why it was built the way it was. That's one of the things I keep coming around to people to try to understand. Like, you don't have to like a thing, but if you can clearly understand its purpose and why, and it makes sense, then it's fine. It just may not be your thing. But also think about the fact that most of the people that played that I saw, even the people that went for two entries because they failed the first time or whatever, did it for free. So it wasn't like Wizards was making a bunch of excess money here, even with all the rebuys. Now, I did see a couple of people that like went five times or something or whatever, but not many. But think about that. Like, for them to even break even, you have to have thousands and thousands and thousands of entries that actually paid the entry fee. And most people didn't. So this was just Wizard just giving money away for the most part. Unless, I mean, we're not going to see the numbers, but at this point, they would have had to have a lot of people either buy in flat or just run out of coins or gems and rebuy in on like the third, fourth, fifth attempts.
Yeah, so last week, if you're on attempt number three or four, at some point you just go, okay, maybe it's just not my day today.
Yeah. Now, I did see, I think it was Matt Sperling. I think he was on like attempt five or six at one point, and he finally made day two, I think. But a few people did that. But really, in the grand scheme, this is a good event, man. Like, Wizards gave away a lot of money. So even if you...
They're not making a whole lot of money, because hardly anybody is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? This wasn't the money grab people are trying to make it out to be. And even if they made money, they probably didn't make more than, what, $100,000 maybe? Maybe two? That's not that much when you're talking about digital video games for a weekend.
No.
Like, they gave away a crap ton of money. Like, think about that. They gave away more for that than most top-level Magic events have given out ever. Like, that's damn cool. And that went to just randoms who rolled out of bed, tossed on a robe, went to their computer.
There's plenty of events I've played in where I had, you know, in addition to whatever the tournament charged, it was at DreamHack, for example, has a Madden tournament where it's, I forget, what is it, 40 or 50 to even get into DreamHack for one day, then your tournament fee. Then you're probably going to eat overpriced convention food while you're there. So.
Yeah, that's true, right? When you go to an actual event with the larger prizes, there's a bunch of extra costs, whether it's hotel, food, travel, like you said, your event entry fee, sometimes travel to and from the event when you have to get Uber or taxis. And then if you win anything, sometimes it's barely a break even. Like, yeah. if you'd have went to a pro tour, and like I think we did the math last week or whatever, you know, even on the light side of things, assuming it wasn't in your backyard or a 2-hour drive, like, you genuinely would be out somewhere between $500 and $1,000 anyway. And that's after let's say you even placed high enough to get a real check and you had to make $2,000 to really make the weekend worth it. And I can tell you, so day one, right? I played Neil Form Winota, so I was a bad guy for the day.
It's buddy, you have to, I mean, I wouldn't say you got to play Winota, but you got to play some where you feel like, hey, this is going to work out.
It was literally knowing that other people were also going to play it, and I thought I had some spots I could change the deck and give myself a shot in the mirror matches. So I did that, and it worked out. I went 7-2. Made day two. So I was like, all right, cool. Then, of course, you know, protests, riots, things are happening. I'm helping people navigate or whatever. Obviously, the whole viral post thing started happening on Sunday. Then I go play, and I have 3 hours, 18 minutes left on Sunday before the time was going to run out. And I wasn't sure what I was going to play. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to play a deck I at least know so I can make all the decisions quickly. I don't have any real concerns. I can just play and not worry about it. And then I had this weird decision because I was like, okay, I want to do it live because everything else going on in the world and things I'm dealing with, I kind of want to socialize while I do it. So I'm going to stream it. I had to come up with a little thing. So I built, put a big thing of my logo over my hand. So like if somebody stream sniping, they wouldn't see it or whatever. It was a little bit bothersome, but it worked out. I ended up getting done with 8 minutes left. We were 7-1. I made $2,000, my friend.
You went down to like, do I cut the red wire or the blue wire with 8 minutes left?
Yeah, it felt that way. Like I got done. The good news is, as I found out, is like if you made it into the last match before the time cut off, you get to finish your match.
That's good.
Yeah, so you don't get cut off middle of playing if you made it. So I had actually started that last match with like 40 minutes? Something like that. It was a reasonable amount of time in the last one. So we were pretty okay. But it was cool. I had a good crowd watching me. I think I ended up with like 50 or 60 people coming through on stream and hanging out. It was a lot of fun. And I played a deck that didn't play a companion. I didn't play Yorian, Luca, whatever. And it was awesome. Though when Wizards listened to my deck, they got the name wrong. They put Gruul Monsters. And I'm like, no, that's a different Gruul deck. Though the person that's listed right below me also played Gruul Monsters, but they actually played the Gruul Monsters deck. So, I don't know. That was a little bothersome. But, yeah, it was cool.
If you want to see the right title, go to Dequan's YouTube channel.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it was fun. So, would I do it again? Yeah. Is my opinion changed because I won money? No, because I was saying this from the beginning. I think this type of event happening, I hope we at least get to see the numbers, but I doubt Wizards would share that because that feels like some proprietary information. But it would be interesting to know just how many people participated, maybe like what percentage of the active playing population is that. Mostly because I want to encourage other companies to do this. Because like we talked about previously, like every time there's opportunity to win any significant amount of money in any of this gaming stuff, it's always gated. And don't get me wrong, I've been fortunate, right? I've qualified for some things. I've made day two of things. I've played on the Pro Tour before. Not that I did well on it, but I got there. And I'm capable of doing it, right? But like a lot of people either don't have the time or the resources or, you know, they can't get time off work to go travel to the big event for 3 days or 4 days or whatever. So they never will have an opportunity. Though they support the game and they participate and they buy cards and they go to their local stores and all that, they're never going to have a shot at these like $250,000 prizes that they show to people, you know? Or like the League of Legends events that have $1 million prize pool, or the big CSGO tournaments or whatever. Those are always like 16 teams or something, right?
Yep.
That doesn't even represent 0.5% of their playing population. But that's where the money is. And the average person who plays will never get access to it. But if this can be proven that this creates more activity, that maybe by the time we get to the second or third one of these, that more people sign up for the game because they have an opportunity to win money or whatever, you'll start seeing other companies do it. So I hope this is a positive trend. I hope we get to try it again. Maybe some different formats. I don't know. But yeah, I'm gonna give this one a thumbs up. The only people I saw complaining were people that just like either for real just bummed out of the event because, you know, they just couldn't get through the best of one portion or whatever. Or they hate Best of One and they didn't even want to try it. But I saw just so many people like, dude, I at least get to try it. You know, and some people were like, man, I only play Best of One. I aced day one, but I didn't really know how to sideboard or do anything. So I kind of went 2-2 on day two and I was out, right? And I think that and that's a thing I hadn't thought about, that it might, and I don't know this to be true, but it might be more skill testing because you have to play two different ways. And it still encompasses all of the people that play Magic Arena. Because even the decks I played, I mean, I built them different ways specifically and took a shot at it, kind of knowing what was going to go down. And I knew day one I was still going to have to get lucky. But I wouldn't play decks I would normally play in best of three because I knew better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. I hope we see more information from it. I hope it went over well. I hope Wizards is happy with it. Sounds like we're going to get other ones here in the future. They didn't say when, but sounds like they're interested in doing more of them. So that's good. So we'll see what happens.
It's a good way, you know, to keep people excited about the game during just a crazy time, you know, with the game and with the world in general.
That's true. I mean, especially while everybody's stuck at home anyway, give them something to do and a chance they can win money. I think it'd also be interesting to see how many people built decks or maybe bought gems or whatever to prepare for the event and now play more or spend more or whatever because now they're engaging with the Arena or Magic community more than they would previously. And I'm sure they're looking at that. They may not. We're obviously never going to hear about that, but would be a really interesting fact to know just how beneficial long-term, not even long-term, even in just a 3 or 4 month window that type of event really spurs. I think that could be cool. But anyway, we also had some bannings this week and we knew these were coming. They had announced them. You know, we knew something was going to happen to companions. We didn't know what cards were going to get banned, but everybody kind of had their list of, we'll say 4 to 8 cards. And most of the cards appeared on some person's list. There was nothing really crazy out there, but they opted to only take 2 cards. Fires of Invention and Agent of Treachery were banned in Standard. They were suspended in Historic, but that basically means they're banned, but it's a soft ban. You can't play with them right now. We'll look at it again in about a month or two, and then we'll decide if they're going to come back or if they're going to stay on the list.
They ain't got to go home, but they can't stay here.
Pretty much. It's pretty much what it is. In Standard, they're just done, and that's fine. But I think people were kind of wondering, like, should more cards have been on there? Should we included Wilderness Reclamation? Should we included Teferi? And it's interesting because some of the better players actually feel like Teferi would have been a mistake to have on the list, believe it or not. I saw that as a very popular opinion. So far, from what I'm testing stuff or whatever, it seems like it has opened the format up a little bit. That the Yorian decks have definitely changed. Some of them have gone to being more blue-white heavy and just getting rid of the red altogether since you don't really have anything big to search for with Luka. Though, there is still the ability to, like, search for a Dream Trawler, which, you know, is already annoying for people. But we'll see how things work. There were some people concerned that Winota was not on the list, but the truth is if Winota can't go get Agent of Treachery, she's just not nearly as good in Standard. Still a problem in Historic, so we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, in Standard, she's pretty much a non-issue right now. I think the two biggest things we decided she can go get are Hactos and Kenrith, and neither of those are nearly as problematic as Agent of Treachery stealing all your stuff.
Truth.
Now, the other thing they did is they changed the rule on how companions work. You now have to spend 3 mana to move the companion from your sideboard, revealed sideboard card space, I guess, to your hand. And then it plays normally like a card in your hand. This is important really for 2 reasons. One is it does create a moment where the card is actually susceptible to like hand disruption or whatever now. That's a thing that could happen in some cases. The other is it keeps most of the cards from being played on time. And meaning like, say you're playing Obosh, and then the turn you hit your 5th land, you can now cash Obosh, right? Now, there are some cases where maybe you don't play something in the turn before, or you only play a 1-mana thing, and then you tap your other 3 to put the Obosh in your hand with the intention of playing it the next turn. Like, stuff like that can still happen. But it definitely changes the pace of play, which does make it a little more fair. It's interesting because I hadn't really thought about that being an option. Most of the stuff that I'd considered had to do with your hand size starting out. But this is actually an interesting fix.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody speculate that this was a way they could handle it either. So this came kind of out of left field, but I think it's a good change.
Yeah, it feels a little like when you read it, it sounds a little cumbersome, but it's really not that bad. It's just spend 3 mana, put it in your hand, then you can just cast it as normal whenever. So I kind of dig it. The interesting thing would be seeing how many decks decide they want to still play a companion when they can't play it quickly or on time as part of their regular strategy. Because, I mean, I built Gruul decks with Umari just because really it's just an extra creature and it's a 4 mana 4/5. And I don't always need the mana reduction, but it's just cool to have access to another free creature if you run out. But if I'm never going to cast it, or like I'm maybe casting it every fifth game or something because I don't want to take turn 4 or 5 off to put it in my hand or whatever, do I still want to play Umari? I don't know. Like, that's something we'll have to mess around with and find out. Maybe I do. But I think there's a lot of decks that they were just including a companion just because, and then they would swap some like 4 to maybe 8 cards in their deck to fit the requirement, because it was so much of a benefit to have access to that free 8th card and occasionally get to use the ability if it's important for your deck. Now that's not going to be the case. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens. And then we have one more. Anybody, oh yeah, go for it.
I was wonder if anybody use one of these things as a Trojan horse where they put it in there just assuming you'll think the deck is built around it and then not really built the deck around it.
Maybe, but some of them would be hard to do though, right? Because you have like,
you still have the restriction, but at this point you've already learned how to play within that restriction, and in some cases found out that it's not as big a restriction as you thought it was.
That's also true. The one thing I will say though is there have been times where, because my opponent is playing a specific companion, I kind of get a leg up. I think you see that actually if you go to my YouTube channel, I actually posted up pretty much the raw footage of the whole day 2 of the Arena Open. I think that comes up in the last match, actually, against the red deck, because I was strategizing something and I had the realization of, oh, they're playing Obosh. They actually can't do these 2 or 3 things because those cost even amounts of mana. And with Obosh, you can only play odd mana cards, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes playing a companion works against you, because your opponent knows there's a very select number of cards you actually have access to.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. So I don't know. It definitely changes things a little bit. I don't know how much. I think that remains to be seen over the next month or two. But I don't hate it. I think it's very interesting.
It's a creative solution. That was not anything that I thought of handling it that way. But it seems like it works. I mean.
Oh, yeah. So far it has. But we'll see. Like I said, it goes into effect on Arena actually probably as this episode's going live or very shortly after. So, yeah. Well, we'll probably have some news on it next week or how we feel about it once we played with it a little bit. And something really cool that's happening, I believe it's this weekend. Let me double check so I'm not made a liar here. But Command Fest online. That's a thing that was announced, geez, I don't know. Feels like forever ago. Time seems like it's getting further and further away at this point. It's been such a crazy, crazy few. We were just talking about this the other day earlier, that, you know, Kobe Bryant's the first celebrity I can remember where like the world mourned. And that feels like it was 9 months ago, but that was only February.
Yeah.
You know, this is a crazy world we're in right now.
2020 is going to be 3 years worth of chaos at the rate we're going.
Yep. So like I said, one of the comedians I follow, somebody was talking about how people are going to feel sorry for the people who have to study this in school. And he said, nah, this is going to be a 300 level college course all its own, just titled 2020. But starting June 6th, which is this weekend, they're going to do Command Fest online. So the cool thing is it's a free event. You just have to sign on, and you can go to, I believe it's cfbevents.com/Command Fest Online. And it tells you the way to set it up. They use a website called spelltable.com, and you can hop on. You'll get randomly paired up. They have a Discord channel that does all the pairings and everything for you. And they tell you kind of how to rate your deck. So you have like 1 to 10 scale on how powerful your deck is. So you're getting put with other people that have similar deck levels. So, because I mean, it's free. They want it to be fun for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. They have a bunch of celebrities, you know, different people that you see online, different people that you've seen on coverage. And you will get paired with them. They're going to sit at different virtual tables. and you'll get to play Commander with these different folks. So you just hang out, bring your Commander deck. You do need a webcam or some way, a phone or whatever, that you can show your battlefield to everybody that you're playing with. But it's pretty cool. The fact that they're even doing this, I think, is neat. It's still encouraging paper play. It's getting people to play Commander who can't really get together in groups right now, because that's kind of the biggest thing about Commander. And they even have a cool Command Fest in a box thing that they're selling, which is super awesome. It's $100. You know, they did the $99.99, which I just hate that, but I get it, you know. But anyway, it's $100. You get a foil soul ring. You get two non-foil soul rings. You get a foil Path to Exile. You get a playset of non-foil Path to Exiles. You get your choice of one of, like, I think it's 24 playmats they have from the last couple of years they use for big events. You get to pick one of those. They give you a deck box, a pack of sleeves, 100 count of sleeves, I guess. You get one random other promo that they've given away at Grand Prix previously. Then you get 5 of the foil special basic land promos they were giving out at Grand Prix. And they have something listed as an artist item, which I'm assuming means it's going to be like some type of sketch card or something or whatever, or something signed by an artist or whatever. That is a lot of value for $100, dude.
Yeah.
Like, they are really just getting it out there, taking care of people. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're going to make some money on it, whatever. It's cool. The other thing, too, about the event is they're using it to raise some money. So there's different things you can buy for various amounts, and they're all pretty pricey, but, you know, they're donations. So as an example, for $100, you can have your choice of each player draws a card, each player discards a card, you can reverse the turn order, or you can copy the next instant or sorcery spell and choose the targets. So that's pretty cool, you know, and on the upper end, for $1,000, you can just ban it to where nobody gets to play with Soul Ring for one match, because that's like a big meme in the Commander community. So pretty fun. You're going to be raising money. If you don't have anything else to do and you're itching to play Commander, I would say check it out. It's going to be pretty neat. I might actually sign up and give it a go for an hour or two. You know, why not?
It sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, and it's totally different. Again, it's a thing that I have to give Wizards of the Coast credit for, because they are the only game company I know of right now that, at least tabletop game company, that has been going to these levels to keep people engaged with their tabletop product, with their retailers, creating new things right now and rushing them out to stores, doing things to help them make sales and really prop them up a bit. Like I said, for much as people gripe about Wizard, and I get it, they don't make a bunch of great decisions all the time, but you got to give praise where it's due too. We can't just be hating on things. Like, we can be mad about stuff, but if people do something right, we got to acknowledge that too. And
you're going to break the internet kind of talk, sir.
Well, yeah, but I've talked to several retailers. They've all said the same thing, that of all the companies, Wizards has done the most right now for them. From software updates, like I said, producing the extra mystery boosters that they're going to send them for free, creating special promos to encourage people to come buy stuff from them, whether that's in-store or their website. You know, stuff like this with Command Fest, it's going to keep people using their cards and buying cards. Like, so much that they're doing. So credit to them with everything going on, because I can tell you firsthand, stuff like this is not easy to coordinate under these conditions, especially with everybody working at home and you're not sharing an office. Like, it's really interesting. So good for them. But then we got other serious stuff to talk about. Gave people a chance to catch their breath, but we weren't done ranting this week. There's more. There's definitely so much more. But so much more that we didn't even know what we wanted to tackle first. But Brian, since you brought this up and you're the comedian, why don't we go sit down at the table talk and or dinner table talk, and you can tell us or lead us into the conversation with around the people saying, well, don't worry about it, it's just a joke, especially as it relates to racial issues.
Yeah, I'm sure some of you by now have seen, and I can't, I mean, part of me can believe this is a thing, part of me is just, part of me can't believe it, They're doing a George Floyd challenge online, apparently. And yeah, you can imagine what that entails. And there are people who think this is funny and are sharing it. And we were both just kind of, at first I saw like, this is Photoshop, right? It's fake. This can't be happening. But I've seen it in enough places now to where, yeah, apparently this is actually a thing people are doing. Talk about tone deaf, not reading the room. And, you know, if anybody is a pastor or knows a pastor, you know how people just watch what they say. They're scared to say certain things because they feel like you're a pastor all the time. As a comedian, I feel like it's the opposite way. People really want to just come up and tell me the most racist, offensive joke sometimes that they can think of because, hey, I'm a comedian and I won't get offended. And it's true that, you know, I get offended, I'm sure, a lot less easy than the average person, but still, the amount of things that people come at me with sometimes. I had one person I had literally just met. I don't know whether the person was joking or whether they were trying. I don't know where they were going with this, but they just, and it was a white person. In passing, they said, hey, you know, they might have owned slaves. Their family might have owned some of my family. Like, what? WTF? I just met you like 2 hours ago. We're not, there's no realm in which you and I are close enough for you to be able to make this joke if it is in fact a joke.
I'm with you, man. I think it's, and I'm with you. I don't really get offended by much. I don't. Like, there's something, and believe me, I have sat at some poker tables with some very old white dudes really set in their old ways and have heard some very racist things. Matter of fact, I think sitting at one of those tables, that was the first time I heard the term porch monkey.
Wow.
And I didn't even know what the hell they were talking about at first. That's how old these dudes were.
That one goes way back. That's not a racial slur the kids are using, you know, on Xbox Live, per se. That seriously, that goes back a ways.
So I've heard some things. And, you know, I get it. Sometimes some people are old or whatever, and they don't even realize how ignorant they're being. But I'm with you. There are some things. I will tell you that when I saw the pictures from the George Floyd challenge, that bothered me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even, like, I'm with you. I almost thought somebody was just messing with me. Because it was genuinely hard for me to believe that you are looking at social media right now. You see the news. You're reading the reports. You see the protests and the riots and the police abuse and whatever. Literally daily and hourly for the last 3 days. And you decide it's going to be really cool for you and your other white friend to go outside and for you to take a picture smiling, kneeling on his neck.
The fact that there's, I mean, I guess there's at least three people involved because there's one person pretending to be the cop, one person laying down, and somebody shooting the photo. And none of these three people said, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this is frightening. Because I've seen there's multiple of these photos. So there's, at this point, probably minimum of 100 people and then you people sharing it that think, yeah, this is really funny. This is where, this is my viral joke moment. This is what the world needs right now.
The problem is there's probably a couple thousand people that have already participated in this thing. And I don't even understand. Like, I literally don't understand. Like, dude, like somebody died to the point that people were upset enough about it that they're out there willing to put themselves at risk of dying to defend the situation. And you're willing to go out there and basically make fun of the dude being dead and how he died.
And you know,
there's
a great series on CNN called The History of Comedy where they ask, you know, talk about one of the topics is when is a joke racist? And somebody asks George Lopez, when is a joke racist? And he says, well, first I think of when it's not funny.
For real. I've told people that before.
There's just nothing, because I would never, you know, I'm not somebody that believes in necessarily sacred cows or topics you shouldn't talk about. I'm a firm believer, you know, that somebody, especially somebody like a Dave Chappelle or George Carlin, can take damn near any topic and create comedy gold with it. But then again, they are some of the greatest people that have ever practiced comedy. You on Facebook, you're not George Carlin. I'm not George Carlin. Nobody other than George Carlin was ever George Carlin or Richard Pryor. So you already, you need to be functioning at a comedic level that only a few human beings ever are.
And here's the thing, like, and I get it. Some people say, like, well, there's just topics you never make jokes about. I don't know if that's true, but that's my personal belief, right? Like, I do think there is space to make black jokes or Hispanic jokes or white jokes or whatever. But there's certain topics and there's certain times and there's certain places. Like, you can't, in the middle of probably one of the craziest times, and at least in modern days in our country, throw that out there on social media and expect it's going to be cool. These kids have to know. Hell, and some of them aren't even young kids. They look like they're high school and college kids. And maybe, hell, for all I know, some of them might actually be grown from the looks of it. But you have to know the internet is not going to forget that. Like, you were doing a thing basically mocking an entire movement and a family of somebody who died brutally. Like, where's the joke in that?
Yeah, and especially when you talk about using, you know, guys, again, like George Carlin, Dave Chappelle, aren't making that joke just for the laughs. There's a point they're trying to make. There's something that they're trying to point out, the imbalances in our society. What are you doing with your George Floyd challenge? Where's the satire? What point are you making? Who have you uplifted with this joke?
And I will say, like, you know, if you want to make, I don't know, a joke about hip hop or dudes wearing their pants too low or whatever. Okay, cool. Those are things that are out there. We know it's a trend. It's a thing. Great. Make fun of it. Fine. Right. Nobody's probably going to hate you. But when you start talking about things that affect people's lives, affect people's livelihoods, when you're talking about the death of families and relatives, it's going to be real hard for that joke to be funny.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are.
Also, another tip that Carlin gave, you know, in a great interview that he did with Larry King, is talking about how, you know, as a comedian, you want to kind of, you want to be punching upward. That's just one of the things that makes it funnier. When you're pointing, you're like joking, for example, at the establishment or at politicians, at people in power. When you're, and I think the interview was talking about Andrew Dice Clay at the time, because his complaint about Dice Clay was that Dice Clay a lot of times was punching downward. As a, you know, as a rich white guy, he's punching downward on minorities and poor people and people who don't get the opportunities. And it's obviously Dice Clay made a lot of money, so he found literally millions of people that thought it was funny, but
yeah,
it didn't last. Where's Andrew Dice Clay now? Anybody seen him? Anybody heard from him? It was hot for a minute. But it just didn't have a lot of staying power.
And, you know, and there's some moments where, you know, like there's a set that Bill Burr does where he's talking about how he dated this black woman and she lived in a really black neighborhood or whatever. And he had to drive over there at night. And he's making the joke about, like, this is what the culture was. These are people hanging outside. They were looking at me funny because I'm a white dude that's here at like 2 a.m, you know. I'm a little weirded out because they're outside. Like, that's not something that goes on in my neighborhood. Or, you know, and the joke is just using the differences in the neighborhood and lifestyles lived to tell the story.
Yeah, where a white guy, you know, learns something about another culture.
Yeah, and that's totally okay, right? Like, that joke is fine. Like, he's not saying anything untrue. He's putting a really funny light on it from his perspective. You know, like, totally chill. And then you have the other thing where there's a channel on YouTube. I think it's called All Deaf Something. But some of you may have seen them. There's like Kev on Stage, Doughboy. It's whatever their crew was at the time. I think most of these videos are from a few years ago, but they're still up and get a bunch of hits. but they did this segment called Roast Me. And they would basically sit in a little classroom type thing, and one of them would get their name drawn. They go to the front, and the rest of the group takes turns roasting them, and then, you know, they could respond back. And if somebody has a crappy roast thing, they get sent to detention, and then they get replaced with another comedian, which is pretty funny. Right? But these are also people that are aware of each other. They know each other personally. They've volunteered to be made fun of. They put themselves out there publicly. So then it's okay.
And when you like, use the word roast, I think people now realize, okay, yeah, all gloves are off at that point. Anything could be said.
Yeah, and it's cool. Like, if we're doing a thing and people want to make fun of me and we're at a party and whatever, it's like, yeah, I'm being goofy and stupid. Like, I'm somewhat of a public personality. Totally fine. But if you go do that to some random person, or you're making fun of somebody in line at Target or whatever, it's like, that's probably not going to go over as well.
And, you know, I have a friend that owns a comedy club, and they, you know, don't allow a lot of blue material. They basically say if it's not something you would see on, let's say, you know, primetime television, they don't want it. And all the time, people, you know, we're comedians. We all try to push the limits. Hey, what about this? What if I say it this way? And, you know, the owner will tell them, the fact that you're asking me about it means you already know the material is problematic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's so true. If you're about to make a joke and you had to preface it by saying, hey, you know, I'm not racist, but this is funny, or I heard a black comedian say this, you already know the material is problematic.
Yeah, also true. Like, there's some things that people can make fun of their own groups because there's an intimate experience there.
You can make fun of your brother. You can beat up your brother. Anybody else beats up your brother, we got to fight. And we got to fight for real, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the same way, like, you're going to see me make very few Jewish jokes unless it's to a Jewish person I know pretty well. Otherwise, not happening.
Yeah.
Like, just not. Like, not going to come out of my mouth.
I make fun of my family all the time, you know, because they say and do funny things that would not occur in a lot of other cultures. But again, because it's my family. I was at that funeral or that family reunion or, you know, whatever event. So it's my story to be able to tell. Like the one you were talking about, Bill Burr, that's his story. He dated that woman. That happened to him. If it happened to you, in some extent, it's almost not a joke. It's just you're reporting what went on, and it's your view of it. And as I said, a lot of times we learn from that different perspective.
Matter of fact, one of the funniest things, there's a dude, and this video went around about 2 years ago, I think. It was a white country dude sitting in his truck telling the story where he saw him like going to his first black cookout. And he literally said, and I'll be honest, there ain't nothing he said in that story that ain't true. There ain't been a cookout I've been at.
For real.
But he's talking about, you know, the piles of food and the great-grandmother being in charge and, you know, people playing dominoes and whatever. And it was just a fun story. You know, and some people are like, dude, why is a white guy telling us, like, dude, he went to a friend with a friend to his family's gathering, and he's just telling his accounts of the story and how he was out of place and how awkward it was for him or whatever. And it's entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, you can do that in that scenario. And it was great. I think he ended up getting a few million hits, actually.
Yeah, one of my friends, for example, it was a black friend of mine. He went to an Indian wedding, and he had never had that experience before. Because apparently it's like a two-day wedding, and he had no idea what he was getting into. He just agreed. He has an Indian friend, and they invited him to the wedding. And he doesn't do comedy. He should. At some point, it's great. I want to do a bit about it because it's hilarious.
Dude, I feel you. The first time I went to a traditional Catholic wedding, oh man, that is a story. Like, when I walked in and they basically gave me a booklet of the proceedings, I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, that thing went on for like 3 hours. I was like, oh my gosh, what are we doing?
And the black equivalent would be, you know, at a funeral, who is on program? And
mm-hmm.
My black people know that's a whole, it's a debacle. If somebody ain't on the program and feels they should be on the program, if somebody gets put on there and they didn't want to talk, oh my God.
Oh, not only that, like, you better not get one of their relatives, somebody's auntie or grandma, be like the leader of the choir And she's got to get on there and give her rendition of the song when she's all sorrowful. And that 2 minute song becomes a 6 minute song.
Yes.
Like, you're going to be there a while.
With virtually no words.
Yep. Oh, man. But yeah, I think that's just where we're going to leave it. Like, there is a lot of things. Actually, I say that. I lie. There is one more thing. There was a woman, and I think I retweeted it just with the line of, "Hey, vegan Twitter, you need to go check your folks." There was a lady, and not only that, she's posted, I think, 3 more videos since this one has gone up. That she's out there saying, well, you know, all Black Lives Matter, blah, blah, blah. You know, but all sentient beings matter. So we also need, like, all animals matter and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is not the time and place. And I thought she was joking. I thought she was just making a joke in bad taste or whatever.
Because I could see it being like a Stephen Colbert satirical type character.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. I'm like, okay, well, I'll check her stuff out. Like, nope, she was being dead serious. She's one of, like, I guess, vegan PETA type people and got to protect all that. I was like, so we're doing all sentient beings matter now? Hell, you might as well said all matter matters.
If I could give one tip this week to my white friends, when your black friend tells you that in all seriousness, they're worried they might get shot, their father, their brother, or their kids might get shot, any response that starts with "yeah, but" is not going to go over well. Just FYI.
True. With all that said, I want to point people over to cardsfair.com's website. Not particular. This isn't a sponsorship thing, though they do sponsor the show. Ellie of the Veil, who was on our show around, I believe it was like episode 22-ish, 24-ish. They wrote a really timely piece that went up today. I guess by the time you listen to it, it may be yesterday. But I recommend people go read that to kind of put in perspective stuff we've talked about here, about visibility, equality, stuff like that, you know, in the creative spaces. It's a really good read. I recommend everybody check it out.
I concur.
But with that being said, you know, this was kind of a little bit of an exhausting episode. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, Brian?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Our family channel is Alan's Ever After on YouTube.
You can find me on just about all social platforms these days at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. If you want to catch me streaming, I'm on Twitch on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. And otherwise, I'm just doing a lot of stuff. So, you know, feel free to follow me on Twitter, over on YouTube, where I'm putting up videos every day now. So, lots of content out there to be had. But just want to say, wherever you are listening from, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And in all seriousness, more than normal with everything going on in the world, all the protests and the rubber bullets and the COVID, if you got to get out, if you feel the need to put yourself in harm's way, it's awesome you support a cause, but be careful, protect yourself, you know, watch out for you and yours. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.